ready to pursue talks on its nuclear activities in return for removal of cruel sanctions against the country as a trust-building step. The commander of Iran's Khatam al-Anbiya Joint Air Defense Command says Iran's air defense systems have been armed with, quote, the most advanced weapons unimaginable to the enemies. Brigadier General Amir Sabahi Fahd was answering a question on reports on social media that the Islamic Republic has produced plasma guns. The general added that the armed forces have full combat readiness to counter any threat. He warned that any miscalculation by the enemies will trigger a decisive response by the Iranian armed forces. This was a response to threats by the US president to bomb Iran's nuclear facilities. Sabahi Fahd was speaking during a visit to south of Iran alongside the commander of the IRGC's Aerospace Force, Brigadier General Amir Ali Hajizadeh. During the visit, they inspected the defense capabilities of the forces stationed in southern Iranian islands. To Gaza, the Israeli military presses ahead with its air and artillery strikes across Gaza, killing and injuring more Palestinian civilians in its latest round of attacks. At least two people were killed in an Israeli drone strike on a group of farmers in the southern Gaza city of Khan Yunis. Also in Khan Yunis, a Palestinian child was killed in an Israeli bombing targeting tents housing displaced people there. Fatalities were also reported following Israeli artillery shelling of areas in and around the city. Early on Sunday, eight members of the same family were killed in an Israeli airstrike in south of Gaza. Other parts of the territory were also the scene of violent regime attacks in the past 24 hours. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, nearly 50,700 Palestinians have been killed since October 2023, when the regime began its genocidal campaign against the blockaded territory. More than 115,000 others have also been injured since then. For more updates, let us go to Khan Yunis and talk to our correspondent Ahmad Al-Najjar. Ahmad, very good to have you on the program. What are the latest news?
Bahman, the families here in Khan Yunis city are once again starting their day by holding more funeral processions for their loved ones. Just over the past night here inside the Nasser Hospital, the families here bidding farewell to at least 19 people who were massacred by Israel's attacks that had exceptionally focused on the city of Khan Yunis here in southern Gaza. Starting from where I stand right now, the Khan Yunis refugee camp in western Khan Yunis, the area that is included within what the occupation designates a safe humanitarian area for the families who are being displaced to come to, but only to find death and killing awaiting them. Just last night, within the Khan Yunis camp here, a residential building for Abdel Hadi family was flattened by the Israeli warplanes. At least one airstrike was carried that targeted the building, killing eight members of the family, including a Palestinian journalist, Islam Miqdad. She was killed in addition to her child within this appalling massacre of Abdel Hadi family. But also within the Khan Yunis camp here, another strike targeted a residential building that killed a little child of a Najjar family and several others. Moving westward to Al-Mawasi, where the occupation has crammed thousands of families inside inadequate makeshift shelters once again, enduring the inhumane conditions within an area that lacks the most basic humanitarian sources for humanitarian services to sustain the lives of the people. The families are still subjected to the attacks by the occupation within that area. Another tent for Al-Ghouti family was targeted over the night, killing six Palestinians of the family, including at least one child. Also within Khan Yunis, but moving to the eastern outskirts of it, within Abasan town this morning, the artillery shelling has been extensively focusing on that town, as well the other eastern towns of Khan Yunis, with one of them targeted a group of civilians there that killed one man and injured several others. Also, last night in the west Khan Yunis, back here to Al-Mawasi, within the remaining crop lands where farmers are still risking their life to just cultivate and harvest whatever they can salvage to provide something to satisfy the hunger of the population here. A group of farmers were targeted, killing two of them within the western of Rafah, where the occupation now has pretty much damaging and destroying whatever remaining aspect of civil life there, of residential buildings, of homes. Everything is being leveled as we speak of Rafah. The scale of destruction and the massive explosions and detonation carried by the occupation in Rafah can be heard in Khan Yunis, and we've actually been receiving reports that the people inside central Gaza can hear the explosions that are coming from Rafah and southern Khan Yunis as the occupation is expanding with its military operations. They're still going ahead with bulldozing and demolishing the remaining infrastructure there to expand and conduct what they call the Mirage Corridor to separate between the Khan Yunis city and Rafah city and take full control of Rafah city like they are still doing within northern Gaza.
Thank you, Ahmad, for the update. Ahmad Anajab from Khan Yunis. The Palestinian Authority has condemned Israel's deadly attack on a convoy of paramedics in Gaza last month, saying it proves the regime is deliberately targeting the Palestinian territory's healthcare infrastructure. Reacting to circulating footage of the strike, which took place on March 23rd, the Palestinian Authority said the video is an irrefutable evidence of Israel's brutality in Gaza and blatant violations of the international law. It added the footage reflects the regime's attempt to cover up its ongoing crimes against Palestinians and erase the truth. The footage, retrieved from the phone of one of the killed paramedics, captures the final moments of the emergency workers that were on a rescue mission in the southern Gaza city of Rafah. The ambulances and fire trucks were clearly marked and had their emergency lights on as they came under fire. At least 15 paramedics were killed in the strike. The violent Israeli attack on rescue teams in Gaza's Rafah continues to draw condemnations. Palestinian Red Crescent Society spokesperson Nebal Farsak has rejected the regime's narrative and demanded an immediate investigation to ensure justice for the victims.
Although ambulances carried the internationally protected emblem and had their lights turned on, the occupation soldiers deliberately opened fire hysterically on the ambulance team, whose members were also wearing Red Crescent uniforms, and this led to the martyrdom of the teams. This video clearly and openly refutes the story presented by the occupation, which deliberately targets ambulances along with medical and health personnel. The occupation is telling a false story. The occupation has told the world that its forces targeted ambulances that were moving suspiciously without their lights on, and accuses them, as usual, with the same fabricated narrative that they belong to Hamas. This is not the first targeting of the society's teams. 27 members of the Red Crescent Society have been killed by Israeli forces while performing their humanitarian duties and while wearing the Red Crescent badge. Today, we, the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, call on the international community to conduct an immediate and independent investigation that ensures justice for the victims and holds accountable all those involved in this crime.
Thousands of protesters have staged a massive rally in the U.S. Capitol against the detention of pro-Palestinian students and scholars in the country in recent months. The protesters gathered in front of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement headquarters in Washington, D.C., calling for the release of the students arrested for supporting Palestinians. They also called for the end of the ongoing genocide committed by the Israeli regime in Gaza and the liberation of Palestine. The demonstrators waved Palestinian flags and chanted slogans in support of the people in Gaza. In recent months, the U.S. administration has launched a campaign of detention of students for their pro-Palestine views. It is looking to deport the students who are legally in the U.S., citing national security. Critics say the move violates free speech protections. A Columbia University student and pro-Palestinian activist who was detained by the U.S. authorities over his opposition to the Gaza war has accused the authorities of suppressing dissent. Mahmoud Khalil, a green card holder detained on March 8th, has said the Columbia University laid the groundwork for his arrest by cooperating with federal authorities. He criticized the university for equating pro-Palestinian sentiment with anti-Semitic hate speech. He said the university authorities have aligned with federal authorities in a manner similar to World War II Nazi collaborators. Khalil was detained following his involvement in anti-Israel protests at Barnard College. His case has drawn attention to broader issues of academic freedom and government intervention in the U.S. Israeli forces are pressing ahead with their raids into occupied Palestinian territories, injuring and abducting residents in the latest round of incursions. At least two people were wounded after Israeli forces opened fire on a group of Palestinians near Wadi al-Humus, northeast of Bethlehem. Meanwhile, Israeli settlers backed by regime forces attacked Palestinian farmers in a village near the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah. They threw stones at farmers and their vehicles. There were no immediate reports of casualties. Israeli forces also attended a Bedouin community near the same village, abducting several residents. Tensions have been high across the occupied West Bank since the regime began its genocidal campaign against Gaza in October 2023. Over 940 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli forces since then. Earlier, we talked to our Ramallah correspondent Naka Hamad to get further details regarding latest Israeli raids into the occupied West Bank towns and refugee camps. Let's take a listen to what she had to say.
As you have mentioned, the IOF attacked many areas in the West Bank. Let's start by the news that is saying about that is talking about the targeting of the Palestinian workers near Bethlehem, to the west of Bethlehem, where the IOF opened fire on a group of Palestinian workers who were just trying to go to that place they worked in. Three of them were injured. Among them is one critical injury that occurred with live ammunition. This is something that we are seeing more, that the IOF attacks Palestinian workers, especially in the areas that are surrounding the apartheid wall, in areas like Bethlehem, in areas like Tarqumia, in Al Khalil, and in areas in the north like Qalqilia, and some parts of Tul Kerem. And of course, that was not the only attack that was made by the IOF forces. The IOF has raided both refugee camps of Aqab al Jaber and Ain al Sultan in Jericho and Ariha near to the east of Ramallah. And of course, while making these incursions, many arrests have been made, detaining Palestinians, terrorizing families in the hours of the night.
The Yemeni armed forces say they have targeted the U.S. aircraft carrier Harry S. Truman and its accompanying warships in the Red Sea with drones and missiles.
In recent hours, the missile force and drone unit, with support from the naval forces, engaged several U.S. warships in the northern Red Sea, including the U.S. aircraft carrier Truman, using a number of cruise missiles and drones. The hours-long attack operation disrupted the enemy's ability to carry out hostile assaults on our country during the period of the strike. Additionally, the naval forces of the armed forces carried out a military operation targeting the U.S. supply ship accompanying the Truman aircraft carrier with a ballistic missile.
Sari emphasized that Yemen's leadership, people, and armed forces are committed to defending the Palestinian people as a religious, moral, and humanitarian duty. He said operations against Israel and Israel-related ships will continue until the regime's aggression against Gaza ends and the territory's blockade is lifted. The new operation came after Yemeni forces targeted an Israeli military site in the occupied Palestinian territories using a drone. Additionally, Yemen's air defenses shot down a U.S. reconnaissance drone over Saada province with a domestically produced surface-to-air missile. The United States presses ahead with its aggression against Yemen, launching new airstrikes on various areas across the Arab country. According to the Yemeni media, the latest strikes by American warplanes targeted the Hafsin area west of Saada city with four raids. The attacks hit a store selling solar energy panels and a civilian home west of the city. Two civilians have been killed and four others injured in the strikes. Footage of the incident shows civil defense teams carrying out rescue operations and working to extinguish fires caused by the bombings. American warplanes also carried out at least five strikes east of the city of Saada. Kamaran Island in the Hodeida Governorate in western Yemen was also hit with five airstrikes. The U.S. and its allies have escalated their aggression against Yemen after the country resumed its anti-Israeli operations over the regime's renewed genocide in Gaza. Most of the U.S.'s attacks target civilian buildings, causing fatalities and injuries among civilian population. And that is a wrap for this hour's World News. Thank you so much for staying with us. Until next time, it's goodbye from me, Bahman Ray.
Everyone has a beloved, a new dear friend. I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio. For those who seek the truth.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
writing. Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the all-compassionate, the all-merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special Program on this Sunday, April 6, 2025. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special Program is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcasts. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special Program is your program. It's your views that are important. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special Program, and as usual, we've received reception reports and emails from around the world, and in this edition of Listeners Special Program, we will read emails from Reginaldo Anunciação, one of our old and regular listeners from Brazil, as well as an email from Sweden from Lillian Mull. And in this edition of Listeners Special Program, we will talk about Maranjab Desert as a tourist attraction in Iran. Maranjab Desert is one of the most popular desert attractions in Iran and Isfahan province. It is just a short distance from Tehran and is located near Aran and Bitgol. The attractions of nature and tourism include sandy hills and rams, Abbasid Caravanserai, and the Wandering Island. Also, it is one of the astronomy sites in Iran. After a short break, I will talk about Maranjab Desert more. Stay with us, please. The Salt Lake of Maranjab, with dozens of tourist attractions, was registered in Iran's heritage list. This lake, which is located in the central desert of Iran between Isfahan, Semnan, and Qom provinces, with a length of 80 kilometers and a width of 30 kilometers, is about 795 meters above the sea level and is the largest salt lake in Iran. The Salt Lake is located 48 kilometers northeast of Aran and Beit Gol City and is bounded on the east of Sefidab and Siyah Kuh Mountains, a national park of the desert, on the north and west of Masila Desert, and on the south by the Maranjab Desert and Bandar Rig. The lake is covered with salt deposits that have formed over the centuries as floods and surface water have accumulated, and the lake's salt depth varies between 5 and 54 meters, scores separated by layers of clay. Sargardhan Island is one of the most scenic parts of the lake, and the most important ingredients of this lake are sodium chloride, sodium sulfate, and more than 90,000 tons of salt is extracted from this lake annually. It is also called Wandering Island in English language. Welcome back. Dear listeners, Iran's deserts have beautiful and untouched attractions. These deserts are extremely beautiful, quiet, mysterious, and dignified. Deserts are among the world's most dramatically seductive natural habitats. In Iran's deserts, spotted diverse animal life can be spotted, including insects and wild animals with a rich variety of spectacular desert landforms. The desert, Sahara, Kavir, or Kalut are scientifically different, and their differentiations depend on altitude, annual precipitation, the type of vegetation, amount of salt present in the soil, and natural formations. In Iran, there are all types of deserts whose sand dunes, salt rivers, salt lakes, desert plants, birds, and wildlife attract thousands of tourists depending on the regional and climatic conditions. This is Listeners, a special program, and let's see what our old and regular listener from Brazil, Reginaldo Anancioso, says. Reginaldo says, hello, how are you, dear sirs or madams? Well, I listen to your programs on SWs. I listen to IRIB English radio programs since, and yes, 80s. I think it means 1980s. Thank you very much for your attention. Also, please, I would like some material, EQSL from Iran. Thank you very much. First of all, salam and warm greetings to Reginaldo Anancioso from Brazil. Thank you very much for this email. Please accept our electronic QSL as confirmation to this email. And many thanks for your attention. Many thanks for your support, Reginaldo from Brazil. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. After a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. We have received an email from Sweden from Lillian Mull. Lillian Mull has sent us the details of her reception. For your information, dear listeners, these reception reports actually are very helpful to our technicians and engineers at IRIB English Radio. You know why? because these reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service for our listeners around the world. And all of you who have sent in reception reports will be receiving a piece of electronic QSL or EQSL from us. So this time, our listener from Sweden has sent us a piece of actually reception report and says, "Dear sirs or madam at IRIB English Radio, I had the great pleasure of hearing your station, IRIB English Radio station." And the details of her reception report. Dear listener, many thanks for writing this email and the reception report. Please accept our EQSL as confirmation to this reception report. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Time flies, and we have to wrap up this edition of Listeners, a Special Program. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and Listeners, a Special Program. We wish you all the best. God bless you. Goodbye.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marcia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. In the last 18 months, every war crime imaginable has been committed by the Zionist regime in Gaza. No Palestinian life is sacred to this regime, and none is spared from the genocide. From newborn babies to the elderly, and from artists to journalists to doctors, everyone is a target. On March the 23rd, at least 15 paramedics were targeted and killed by Israeli troops. Now, a video has surfaced, which was taken by one of the paramedics who was killed, and shows the fire trucks and ambulances were clearly marked and sirens were on, but regime troops opened fire and assassinated these rescue workers who were on a mission to help others. What type of entity targets those who are simply trying to help others? Stay with us as we look at this on the Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Ranjit Brar, vascular and leader of the British Communist Party out of London. And Batu Sobeji, activist and a political analyst out of London.
The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome both of you to the program. I'd like to start it off with in London with Ranjit. I mean, regime officials had originally said that the vehicles were unmarked and approached in a suspicious manner. Now, the video clearly shows Israeli forces opening fire and executing aid workers and the emergency vehicles were clearly marked. So do you think that this will make a difference now that this video has come out? Will these horrific assassinations be condemned? Can we expect international entities to investigate what has taken place?
Thanks so much. It's good to be with you. It depends, really, what you mean by to whom will it make a difference. We've seen that Israel is giving absolute indemnity to perform any atrocities. And commit any atrocities by our government, by our... Are you still with me? I'm sorry, I'm having connection issues at my end.
Okay. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Sorry, if you can see me, I'll carry on, but something's happening. Sorry. You can
yes.
see that Israel is given absolute indemnity to commit its war crimes and atrocities. That's been the case in historically for a long period of time, but throughout the whole of this episode, this genocide... we have seen successive governments, certainly in my country, in Britain, give total indemnity and impunity to the Zionist regime. Its spokesmen, its leaders, Netanyahu being a particularly cynical example, but by no means alone, has been carte blanche to come on the media and denounce all of his victims as terrorists, as rapists. This is ongoing. New footage is coming almost on a daily basis. He's encouraging Trump and other governments in the West to crack down on the pro-Palestine activists. And in so doing, he's been very open, saying, who are you demonstrating for? You're demonstrating for these murderers, these rapists. And by that, it's been absolutely clear that, as his now dismissed Ben-Gavir foreign spokesman had said, we are going to treat the Palestinians, that we're dealing with human animals, and we'll treat them as such. We'll cut off their food, their water, their fuel, their electricity, their medical supplies. And I have watched with horror the wholesale destruction of the entire medical infrastructure of Palestine, systematic destruction of hospitals, of clinics, of healthcare workers. So this is not an isolated example. It's an egregious example from which, in which the Israelis have been very clearly caught lying, caught out in their lie, and demonstrated the extent of their atrocity. But, after a brief pause when it seemed that some kind of negotiation was going to happen, Netanyahu seems emboldened by Trump's message that he's free now to execute his ethnic cleansing, that this is the American plan, and he's acting for that end. So will it make a difference? Will there be investigation? I don't know what more investigation we can have when the highest international court, the ICJ, has said this is absolutely a genocide, and yet there is no enforcement, there's no action.
Right.
And we really see the same pattern of behavior. So it really is a question of what are the forces that can stop Israel, rather than will Israel be held to account by some kind of normal judicial process, which, as we have seen, is lacking.
Right. Well, stay with me, Ranjit, because we're going to get into that part of it also. Let me cross over to Batul. Now, the bodies of medics and rescue workers were found in a mass grave last week. Let's talk about the absolute lack of respect in general that the regime has for Palestinians. And we have seen even bodies that have been bulldozed, mass graves just left out. What kind of entity are we talking about? I mean, it's so unbelievable. This 18 months and every day just seems to get worse and worse. I mean, your thoughts about this, that not only do they kill in such a vicious manner, they do not even give somewhat of even respect, sometimes to even bury them or in this case, burying in mass graves where people happened to come across this grave last week?
Absolutely. One body from the mass graves that was containing the bodies of paramedics was recovered with their hands tied and actually showed signs of severe torture. And you had one medic that even had their clothes removed and another was beheaded. So they were executed essentially at point blank range by Israeli soldiers. It's not the case of just missiles being thrown from the sky. And as you mentioned, many of them were buried alive with their, even their feet bound, according to the Red Crescent. The Israeli occupation entity tried to even bury the ambulance, the civil defense, and even the UN vehicles that were present. So I think all of this just shows that Israel is a killing machine. It gloats and it considers it an achievement the more that it kills. Its philosophy is on the destruction of life. You know, especially the subhuman Amalek Palestinian children and babies, they don't deserve to exist. So all of this shows that Israel's goal is to kill all life in Gaza. That's why it intentionally murders paramedics and other key workers in the Strip. So this past year and a half has shown that the entity is a criminal aggressor against everything. It's not just a matter of specifically having something against paramedics or journalists per se. What about the mosques and the churches, the schools, the bakeries? What about all of those civil institutions that are of service to the people that are being indiscriminately struck, you know, all of these civilian buildings? So the strategy for continuing this war is to create the most unbearable conditions for the Palestinian families through not just the killing, but also, you know, the knock-on effects that the state of war brings. So you have, out of the 2.2 million Palestinians, you have 1.9 million who are literally displaced. But it's not just the destruction of their homes. All of Gaza is now rubble. That includes the schools that have been relentlessly bombed. So that means kids have no education. With bakeries and stores no longer there, that means there's a lack of food. There's also a lack of clean water, which means that there's a catastrophic hunger strike. You have every kid in Gaza at risk of famine. So not only dying from the malnutrition and the dehydration, but they're completely cut off from the medical services. Hospitals are completely dysfunctional. And the killing now of key workers who would treat those wounded. So the goal over here is one, and that is to force the Palestinians to mass migrate. That's why they're unleashing hell in Gaza, in the words that Trump uses, because Israel has completely failed to achieve anything. So inflicting mass destruction, and we have to make this clear, is not a sign of strength. It's a sign that Israel cannot achieve anything with less destruction. So mass destruction is resorted to. It means it cannot use logic, it cannot resort to political means. Yet this approach has proven to be so futile because the Palestinian people have consistently rejected displacement, have remained steadfast in their land. They're really living miracles. There's no other way to put it, because the goal is to create so much hell that they would want to turn the people of Gaza against the resistance, to call for its disarmament, not realizing that the people of Gaza are the very resistance. After all of these months of relentless massacring, they will not surrender to this enemy and would rather die on their feet than live on their knees.
Right. Well, Ranjit, let's talk about the medical staff in Gaza in general. I mean, you're a doctor. They're unbelievable dedication, that risking their lives every day, and they know that just because they're helping others, that they're even at greater risk. Your thoughts about this, being a doctor and seeing what we've seen over the last 18 months from hospitals being attacked, doctors, directors of hospitals being killed, imprisoned, tortured, disappeared. Let's talk about the targeting of the whole medical side of things in Gaza. Your thoughts on what has taken place?
Well, I think, first of all, that the targeting is specific and deliberate. We saw right at the beginning of this escalation of the genocide, and really it is a 100-year-old genocide, but you know, this last 15 months, it was marked by the bombing of the Methodist hospital, Al-Araib hospital, a bombing which was possibly done with a JDAM bomb, so a fuel air explosion bunker buster type bomb, incredibly powerful destructive means. The hospital survived, but the grounds were packed with civilians, women and children particularly, who were sheltering, thinking this was a safe place, that a hospital had a kind of sanctity and sacred status, even in war, that would mean that the civilian population would be safe. And it was deliberately targeted. And still, if you look up that on Wikipedia, you'll see news source after news source from around the world cut and paste their questioning, as if we don't know who did it, we don't know how it happened. It was probably Palestinian Islamic Jihad. It was a kind of magic bullet theory, you know, a bit like President Kennedy's association of how it could possibly have been, you know, a friendly fire, you know, with Palestinians who were bombing their own hospitals. And this is the kind of relentless propaganda, which is the information war that goes along with the killing spree. I do know medics from Britain who have gone out to Palestine. It's interesting, over a decade ago, I tried to get access to come and assist. It's not that Palestine doesn't have enough doctors. Palestine's got plenty of hardworking, dedicated doctors. They're Palestinian doctors I work with in Britain who are in exile and are able to return to their own land. The point is, of course, that there's a systematic strangulation of Gaza that happens that prevents them from getting the necessary supplies. And now that has become, as I said, a whole-scale and systematic targeting of the entire health infrastructure of a people. This in itself constitutes a very major war crime, but one that is given absolute impunity. It sickens me, you know, that in the face of the crime, really, I don't consider this just an Israeli crime. I'll say everywhere to everyone who asks me, this is a British crime, this is an American crime, this is an EU crime. They are the ones who supply the weapons, they're the ones who created the State of Israel, they're the ones who continue to give it diplomatic, military, press impunity on every level. Rishi Sunak famously went over and hugged, you know, Netanyahu and said that, of course, Israel has a right to defend itself against men, women, children, and the health infrastructure. This is what they're saying. They've sent quadcopters into hospitals who systematically shoot, you know, nurses as well as doctors in operating room. These cases are documented. So there's nothing accidental. It's the deliberate message being sent that there is nowhere that is safe. Schools, mosques, hospitals, churches, food facilities, zones specifically marked out, demarcated for civilians to shelter from the alleged conflict. This is a policy of ethnic cleansing, it's a policy of genocide. And the latest example, you know, because let's not forget, Labour Party is currently the administration in mind, which touts itself as some kind of socialist and progressive force, which absolutely is running the atrocities, is running the genocide, whether that's in Ukraine, Gaza, or anywhere else. And, you know, David Lammy, who is our current foreign secretary, who is the MP for Tottenham, which is a poor North London neighbourhood, predominantly Afro-Caribbean neighbourhood, and he talks about it being the honour of his life to serve in this capacity running this genocide. And he has actually, you know, been put on record over this particular shooting saying, this is terrible and the people accountable must be held responsible, as if it was unknown who the people accountable are. It's absolutely known, and our government in this way shelter the majority of the British people from understanding exactly what's happening, and that really is the information war that's going on. And in parallel with that, there's a real escalation in the repression against the Solidarity movement in order to try and beat it off the street and actually to make its demonstrations illegal.
Yes, indeed. Well, Batul, Hamas says that the video clearly proves Israeli crimes against humanitarian workers and contradicts the Zionist version of what happened. It also says that the video is irrefutable visual evidence, which exposes Israel's lies, proves the systematic targeting of humanitarian workers, and constitutes premeditated murder under international law. Do you agree with this statement of Hamas? And if so, each one of these are considered war crimes. And again, it is as if it means nothing at the end of the day.
Absolutely. I don't think anyone disagrees with that, not even the Israeli occupation entity itself, as your guest rightly alluded. I mean, they come out and they say these words in the open, that every Palestinian is a target, they're human animals, they're Amalek. The goal is to create a situation in which Gaza is completely unlivable, to force the Palestinians to mass migrate. So there's no hope of life in Gaza. That's why they're unleashing all of this hell in Gaza. So that's absolutely something that I don't think anyone can refute, and is something that these past 18 months has put to the test. In terms of what this amounts to, of course, international law does not apply to the Israeli occupation entity because it is protected by America unconditionally. And these past 19 months have shown the dirty face of the capitalist structure that is ruling the world, and has really removed those masks of deception, because such a scale of atrocity has not happened since World War II. All the conventions and all of the agreements to prevent such a genocide from happening have shown to be complete lies in front of the real test that we are seeing materially on the ground. I mean, this all goes back to the formation of the occupation entity in 1948, and everything by extension linked to it, shame for the whole world, because the world superpowers were the ones who conspired to uproot the Palestinians, and the whole world turned a blind eye to it, and the whole world is essentially covering it right now. And there's even an outcry and a punishment on anyone who tries to resist. I mean, look at the relentless bombing of Yemen, for example. There is a price to be paid by the resistance countries who intervene with the condition of a ceasefire. That's all they're calling for. Yemen right now is saying all we want is a ceasefire to be achieved, and then we'll stop bombing the ships. We'll stop the targeting of the ships. And also look at how individuals are criminalized and censored in countries in the West. So this ethnic cleansing is ongoing, and the numbers killed and wounded is something that is unprecedented. And I would argue ultimately the vast, vast majority of the world is sleeping and not giving except a little. But once public opinion changes, and it is changing, and calls for intervention become effective, then I think that is the only factor that will kind of make, you know, the governments of the West give, you know, shy announcements in front of this huge level of unprecedented genocide, you know, such as allowing the humanitarian aid at the most minimal level and getting people used to this low rate of Palestinian killing. I guess the upheaval in the world reaction happens when, again, people wake up to the fact that over 100 Palestinians are killed on a day, or human bodies are flying at a certain altitude. You know, people are used to hearing a certain level of killing, and when it goes above that, that's when public opinion riles up more. Mm-hmm. But in any case, all of this would only lead to partial interventions, and then it will go back to normal. Because the hope, I think, on an international front won't come from these governments, but it will come from the people who form that resistance front globally.
Right.
And that is all people rising up and saying, enough is enough. Every person has a fight in their respective dominion, but it won't come without price, because that's the way the system's been set up. You will face resistance if you speak up.
Right, right. Well, Rajit, where is the outcry from the doctors and others who work in medical facilities worldwide? I mean, from the beginning of this genocide, as you said about the hospitals and how they were targeted, I mean, where's the solidarity campaigns? What's happening with doctors worldwide, nurses worldwide, paramedics worldwide? Why aren't we seeing more of an outcry from them?
Interesting question, and I don't know if you've got time for me to fully explore it on the program. You know, your last guest made a lot of interesting points, but I would disagree with on one thing, and that is, this isn't an unprecedented genocide. I would put it to you that it's the stock in trade of Western imperialism to commit these genocides in order to enforce its rule and to loot the entire globe. The entire history of Africa, Asia, Latin America is replete with these genocides. Even North America, if you go just a few hundred years back in history, certainly since the collapse of the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc, when Anglo-American imperialists, when the NATO empowers, felt themselves to be, you know, without opposition, when they felt their unipolar moment had arrived, they've been on a rampage across the globe of new colonial wars. And that means Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, you know, Yemen, as you rightly pointed out, we could keep going. The level of their atrocities is enormous. The way they've been able to get away with it is because that they still make enough profits from the looting of the entire world to, relatively speaking, elevate the standard of life of workers like myself in the imperialist heartlands. And so they've used two methods. One is the carrot, one is the stick. At the moment, they're going through a deep economic crisis. And so the carrot, the level of bribery, the good life that they can give to workers in the West is decreasing. And so they are relying increasingly upon the stick. And I think, you know, we're not powerless. There are examples, you have to go back quite a long way in history, when the workers of imperialist countries have stopped their own ruling class from waging wars. They are ultimately the people who operate the war machine, operate the press, operate every aspect of society. Capitalists give the orders, they pay the wages. But workers have to consent to it. They've taken a great deal of trouble in order to buy off the political leadership of the working class. The Labour Party is the case in point. People think of it as a workers' party. It's a party of imperialism. But it's gone further than that. They've bought off and essentially controlled the trade union Congress movement, which generally speaking, can be mobilised. When the Labour Party give the word, that will direct most of the opposition. And then if we look further, even the Stop the War movement, the Palestine Solidarity Campaign in our country, they're deeply linked to the Labour Party, which limits the extent of their effectiveness of their opposition. So in terms of the medical, if you come just right back to the why don't doctors? Doctors were encouraged because it was the establishment policy to give solidarity with doctors in Ukraine, even though that was a NATO war in which the fascists had been installed in order to batter Russia. I don't want to get off the topic. But the reverse was the case. What Palestine solidarity campaigners can see, there's such a glaring difference. Emails were sent around in my hospital encouraging me to donate, to buy weapons, helmets, all kinds of things for the Ukrainian people to fight Russians. But if I speak out, if people wear badges supporting Palestine, if they wear kafir, if they speak words in favor of Palestine in their hospitals, they are sent for disciplinary action. There are hundreds, there are hundreds of doctors I know of who have been reported. And there's a strict regulatory framework and kind of a political policing that's been put in action. I myself was at demonstration, was called out by Zionists working in conjunction with the police at the orders of our cabinet level government politicians in order to try and criminalize me. One instance on a charge of being a racist, on one instance of a charge of being a terrorist. And subsequent to that, the police contacted the regulatory authority, the General Medical Council, the people who, without whose recognition, I can't practice as a doctor, I can't hold a license to practice medicine, and then tried to put me through a regulatory process, which was drawn out over a year, which tried to strike me off as a doctor. Now, others have worked from the other end. They've been taken simply on the end of their social media, initially reported by groups such as the Jewish Medical Association, which actually is a branch of the Israeli Medical Association, groups like Harry's Place, groups like Nasha Jew, and there are a whole number of them. And some of them, of course, working very closely with governments such as the Community Security Trust and others. They're a very organized, coordinated group that have been taken to the heart of British imperialism and work actually as a level of political policing. And so therefore, actually there's a great deal of support for Palestine, but it's being censored.
Suppressed.
Being deeply censored, sorry, because we're just
about out of time. Really quickly, Batu, based on what Rajit said, I mean, it just seems like the control is growing in the West over the people to try to suppress them for not even trying to show any type of solidarity. But you said earlier, despite all of that, you feel that the people are waking up. 30 seconds, Batu.
Absolutely. I think the hope on an international front comes from that resistance front globally. That is, all people of nations rising up against the occupation entity and saying that this is too much of a burden on our souls to bear. Every person has a fight in their respective dominion, whether that's fighting the disinformation war, if you're a student at university in the West calling for divestment campaigns, ramping up the shutting down of weapons factories through civil disobedience, challenging in the workplace. The stain is on every individual institution, on every individual who remains silent, because if we remain silent, it means we've legitimized it. If we've legitimized it, it means that there are zero red lines and there are zero values, because what occurs in Gaza can effectively occur anywhere else in the world. Yes, speaking up comes with a price, but there's a greater price to pay with silence against all of humanity.
All right, and on that note, I thank both of you for being with me. Rajit Brar, vascular surgeon and leader of the British Communist Party out of London, and Batu Sobeti, activist and political analyst, also out of London. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marcia Hashimi. Goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
once had a teacher, the teacher of teachers. He changed the world for the better and made us better creatures.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to the program, The Teacher. Please stay with us.
What will we say in front of it?
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, an introduction into the most important Islamic teachings and concepts. I'm Ata, the host of this program. Brother Alavian and Sheikh Rouhani are the special guest speakers for today's discussion. Brother Alavian, salam alaikum.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, salam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
All right, for today's discussion, we want to talk about another prophetic hadith full of teachings for Muslims all around the world by Prophet Muhammad about Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba and Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, al-Hassan wal-Hussein, Sayyid al-Shabab ahl al-Jannah. Brother Alavian, let's start with you. What is the translation of this hadith and what does it show regarding Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba and Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. In this famous prophetic hadith, we read that al-Hassan and al-Hussein are masters of the youths of paradise dwellers. It means that they are the master of the youth of the Jannah or paradise. So is there going to be any old person, old people in the paradise? Definitely no. So all the inhabitants and dwellers of Jannah and paradise are the youth. And they are the masters of the youth. So it means basically or naturally, if we want to have a literal translation of what the Holy Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam has said, is that Hassan and Hussein are masters of all the people of Jannah.
All right.
Right? So this is one concept that we can reach. But so does it mean that the Holy Prophet mentioned this to say that, okay, in Jannah, nothing is going to happen here in this world, but they have been saved only for Jannah, for paradise.
Okay.
So this is, I think, a very superficial look and, let's say, attention to the hadith.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that even in this world, there were some important people, they were the masters of people, so that even at the time of the day of resurrection, in the day of judgment, they are also the masters of the people there. So because at dunya mazraat al-akhirah, they have done something in this world,
yes,
that they have prepared this world, and they have actually lived in this world in a right manner, that they will be the masters of the youth of al-Jannah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So this hadith actually has been frequently narrated by different scholars from Sanan Tirmidhi and in different actually books of hadith, like the book of hadith by Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani and others.
The Sunni one.
Yeah, the Sunni one.
Yes, okay.
And even in the world of Shia Islam, also lots of scholars, Sheikh Tusi in his Man La Yahdar al-Faqih and others have mentioned and narrated this hadith. And this is a hadith that doesn't need to be actually, doesn't need to work and focus on its validity and authenticity. It's quite valid, right, and authentic.
Okay, thank you, Varadha Levyan. Let me get to Sheikh Rouhani. Okay. I will get to more details from your tongue. Sheikh Rouhani, al-Hassan and al-Hussein are the masters of the use of paradise dwellers. As Brother Alavian also said, that this is not a sentence from the tongue of a grandfather about his grandchildren. I mean, this is not because of the blood relations that these two had. For sure, Prophet Muhammad saw something in the future of these two young men, Hassan al-Hassan and Hussein, and the role that they might have in guiding the people into the right path. What do you think that path is that reads?